Okay, thank you, David, for the introduction. So indeed, the reason of this this was a public lecture given in the occasion of the 100 years of death of Boltzmann in Duino, which is a really quite charming village nearby Trieste. And so last month there was a ceremony, there was put some plate, there was some and so people asked me to deliver a seminar on Boltzmann figure, on his idea, on his time, and so on. So for this reason, I will not obviously enter in any physical discussion of the concept that, as all we know, are profound, subtle, is still today matter of active research and so on. But nevertheless, we will content ourselves to put all these concepts in perspective to understand how they grow, what was the contribution of Boltzmann, what was the difficulty he met along his life. So all his life he struggled for an atomistic point of view, and indeed he somehow paid a quite high price for it. So first of all, let me introduce our hero. So this is Ludwig Boltzmann at 35 years old. And so he's really one of the most important scientists of the 18th century, at least. A link, 19th century, a link between Maxwell and Einstein, really probably is the figure which is in between. Now, if there is really a symbolic meaning behind the, say, the scene of the world, in my opinion, there is no best example than the day of his birthday. So he was born on the 24th of February, 1844, which is the night of Mardi Gras Ball. So it's the night that make a separation between the happiness, say, of the carnival and the sad and sorrow of the period before Easter. So indeed, all his life, this is very important to keep in mind, Boltzmann oscillated wildly between a period of great excitation, great happiness, but deep and very depressing moment. So indeed, the pendulum of his life always has been like this, and we will see example of this. Sorry? Was what?
Was he what we would call today bipolar?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. I would say definitely so, yeah. Okay, so since Boltzmann, likes to see the world as a chaotic motion of molecules, his life also was very chaotic. So he started in Vienna, where he spent 3 years, then he went to Graz. Then he decided to go back after 2 years in Vienna, stay there 3 years. Then he goes back to Graz, 14 years. Then he received an offer to Berlin. Actually, it's very, very curious, all the story of offer he received in his life and how badly managed and finally declined. So entering very, very complicated negotiation and so on. So in Berlin, it was almost 1 year to get the story finished, and at the end, the emperor has to sign that he will not come. So it was very, very a big mess. And you know, got the chair in Berlin, Planck. So instead of, so the Berlin was just a little parenthesis. But then he decided to go to Munich. He stayed there 4 years. Then he go back to Vienna, 6 years. Then he go back to Lipsia, 4 years. Then he decided to go back to Vienna. So, I mean, very, very chaotic and very, very, how to say, he was always unsatisfied or something. So he go there and get happiness, but soon get depressed, so he want to move and so on. Now, he live in a period of history which is really quite beautiful, I would say, for a lot of reasons. So it's the period of Franz Joseph Austro-Hungarian Empire. That, you know, stay long, this is the emperor that has lived probably forever. I mean, people thought a certain moment he would never die. So it's the period of all the beautiful cafe in Vienna. is the period where beautiful music was around. Mahler, for instance, is in that period. Beethoven was very much appreciated, Schubert, and so on. And all this period has been beautifully described in the masterpiece by Robert Musil, The Man Without Quality. So it's really the secular Vienna with all development in philosophy, positivism, in art. Stefan Zweig also write a beautiful book on that. Now, one thing that should be said clearly is that Boltzmann in his life has recognition, has a lot of recognition. As a matter of fact, he was very, very famous person. People really offer him a lot of positions. For instance, he received a PhD honoris causa in Oxford in 1896. As well as at the beginning of the century, he was nominated for the Nobel Prize by people like Planck, Leonard, for instance. Obviously, he didn't got because that year there was Thompson along the way. I mean, that obviously was much better. But just to say that his name was very well known and very well appreciated. Just to say, because, you know, there is a legend that he was really a figure, not really well considered by his contemporary, blah, 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 blah. There is a part of true, of course, but one should be said that he was indeed a very influential person at the time. So at the end of his life, here we are talking about a picture when he was around 60, well, the swing of this pendulum get back to sorrow. He also try and previous attempt of suicide at the beginning of century in Dresden, in Lipsia, sorry. He was in asylum there. The son died also that year, so there was a lot of trouble in his life. So finally, he was spending a period of vacation in Duino. So this is the picture of the castle of Duino. So Duino is really very, very charming place, probably the last place you would think to commit suicide, I would say. But this is what happens. And then he hung himself outside the window of an hotel. And as a matter of fact, was found by his young daughter that, after all, cannot speak anymore. So was the story goes that the wife and the daughter went to the beach, saying that he said them that he will come later, but he never came. So the wife sent the daughter to look for the father, and the little girl just find him hanging from the hotel. The hotel is still there, actually. It's very, very nice Austrian style building. Anyway, so this is in short, I want just to give a very, very brief point of his life before entering really in the discussion. So the discussion, or rather the plan of my seminar, is to put everything in perspective. I will spend just a few time in discussing the rise and fall of mechanics, because after all, this was his main belief. The birth of new science in that centuries, electromagnetism and thermodynamics. The history of atomism and the kinetic theory of gas, the entropy, that is the measure of disorder. The annus mirabilis, the annus mortis of him, is really, he died in 1906, and the annus mirabilis is 1 year before. And then the Boltzmann legacy, I would like to spend a few words what has really, I mean, all the boost he made in the... Now, as you know, everything started with a plague epidemic. So Newton was dumped in the Cambridge countryside, probably start thinking about Apple, start thinking other things. And at the end of this was the Principia Mathematica. We are talking about 1686, that obviously opened all the door of the heaven. So people were very, very much excited to control all the law for the heaven. Now, there was much more development mechanics later on, Euler, Lagrange, blah, 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 but probably the most influential person was Laplace. And one of the most influential book in history is the Exposition du Système du Monde, where it just said, listen, give me the initial condition, the law, and then I will give you what is next. No, so no worry that after that, people start really to develop a mechanical analogy of everything. So any kind of phenomena should have a mechanical analogy. For instance, Lord Kelvin, that we will see is a father of thermodynamics, used to say that as far as he cannot draw a mechanic analogy, he cannot understand what's going on in any example. So at the end of this, people think really that the world was a big meccano, so something that you can control everything given the law of mechanics. Well, you know, nature is very difficult to cage, I mean to trap. So at that time start a new interest that didn't fit at all with the scheme, and principle was electricity and magnetism. And well, there was the famous experiment by Volta at the beginning of the century, where he created really a continuous current just piling up disk. And as you know, he received a lot of attention. So Napoleon, for instance, was very, very caring about it. Probably one should open a parenthesis about relations, science and military, but this is not probably the. Anyway, he received a lot of attention. And people start again to look at the heaven, but this time with different perspectives. So the lightning. And you know, there was the crazy experiment by Benjamin Franklin that showed clearly that lightning was electricity, was charge. And even though it was a crazy experiment to conduct, you know, he could have died straight away. Nevertheless, open the way to all the spectroscopy of the 19th century, where people devise experiment like Crookes valve and so on and so forth. So it opened really the way to all the spectroscopy of the century. Now, a little earlier was the measurement by Coulomb and the experience of Oersted and also Ampere that made clear that what was going on with this electricity law that doesn't fit really mechanics. But the headmaster of the time on the experimental side was Faraday. And Faraday proved something very, very deep, actually proved in a way the reality of the line of forces. So he was really able to show that all the idea of action, distance action by Newton and so on, probably has to better reformulate in another way. Obviously, to get what's going on, one should wait Maxwell. So Maxwell really understood everything. And with his treatise on the 1876, was all the way of electromagnetism as we know now. However, the 18th century is, socially and historically speaking, the year of industrial revolution. So a lot of things was changed rapidly, firm was constructed, and a new event occurs. So the key concept of that time was energy. Energy and transformation between different forms of energy. So by Watts already created his machine that was able to promote mechanical work out of steam, and then there was a more refined machine, thermic machine on the way. Even the first car was just designed in that year. So out of this, a new science was born, thermodynamics. Now, thermodynamics is a science with many fathers. So he has Clausius, for instance, Lord Kelvin, von Helmholtz, Carnot, Boltzmann himself, and so on and so forth. Now, as you know, is a science which is based on purely phenomenological fact. So there is no commitment whatsoever what is behind the fact. So you establish certain relation. You put up some principle, and out of this principle, you make an axiomatization of this principle in the best tradition of mathematics. So no wonder that after you have settled the principle, everything is really rigorous, can be derived, and people enjoy as the most rigorous science of the time, and as David was saying at the beginning, probably will stand forever. So what are the principles? Well, the first principle, there are two essentials. The first principle is the energy meant as mechanical, and heat is conserved in any process. So if you take a vessel and you just heat them, you produce some work, but at the end the balance is zero. Now it's actually very interesting how this idea was realized in science. The first one that realized was a medical doctor, Robert Mayer, but he used to travel in the Dutch boat in the tropical latitude. He noticed something very strange. He noticed that the blood of the people usually used to cut himself the blood to release for pressure, or to have a relief of pressure. So he noticed that the blood of the vein was not so blue as was supposed to be. So there was still a lot of oxygen in it, and he interpreted that the heat present at that latitude was enough to supply the energy that has not to be used by the blood himself. So you got heat just because you burn oxygen in the blood, but he noticed a surplus of oxygen at that latitude. So he came up with this idea. He tried to write it down. He wrote it down on paper. He was considered a crook. I mean, he didn't get anyway. And to have the story go on, one should wait Hermann von Helmholtz, that was more respected physicist, then pick up the idea and formulate it much better, and this time people start to pay attention to it. Now, obviously, if heat is energy, you need to know how to convert one form to the other. And this is where James Joule came in, and he just settled his beautiful, simple, and incredible effective experiment, where he just measure how much heat you have just making a mechanic energy turn into heat. And so using just measuring the change of temperature in a substance, he was able to establish this relation. Now, obviously, people start to wonder what is the nature of heat. So heat is energy, but energy of which kind? I mean, people notice that you can have dilatation, heat deform object, but what is really the nature of it? Now, apart from the nature, there was also the story how the heat propagate. So people conduct a lot of experiments seeing, say, the decreasing of temperature along a bar, which is heat in there and not at the end. And in 1807, Joseph Fourier, that was a mathematician of the Napoleonic era, you know, invent the Fourier series to solve the Fourier equation for heat. So he proposed the Fourier equation for heat propagation, and out of it, if you apply, say, to a material where you have a certain temperature distribution, you can just see how the evolution of the heat goes, and it goes, as you know, pretty well. I mean, it's so. This obviously doesn't solve the nature of the heat, but on top of that, people start realizing that even though the first principle was satisfied, energy has to be conserved, nevertheless, there are processes in nature which never occur. Something like a cold source that just transmits heat to a hotter one. So the story always goes the vice versa. So start wondering what's going on with these things. So people start to set up theories. The most fashion theory at that time was caloric. So caloric was kind of fluid, like the ether that was used in other contexts. And people have a very naive idea, something like, well, a hotter body is a fluid, higher than the other one, so the heat just goes as a water river that fall down. However, so this the main supporter, say, of this kind of idea was, for instance, Lavoisier and Berthollet. So the main support come from chemistry, if you want. However, this idea was challenged very much by a curious character, the Count Rumford. You know, the Count Rumford probably needs a seminar in himself. I mean, he's a very, very curious character. He was born American, but he was a spy. He has to ran away from America. He ended up in England. In England, was seen as suspicious, as a spy of a Bavaria prince. So, I mean, a lot of fun. But he was very, very clever man. He invented many, many things in his life, including the chimney. I mean, how you have the most efficient way to take up smoke from a chimney. So he noticed one thing about this caloric theory. And he noticed because he was appointed by the count of, by Bavaria prince to drill the cannon. So he noticed that you can produce an infinite amount of heat by a stick which is really thin, as much as you want. As far as you drill, you can produce heat. So how can be true that the caloric theory? How can be the caloric theory to be true when obviously whatever the fluid was at a certain point should be finite? I mean, and the thicker you can make it thinner and thinner, so I mean, it's impossible. So heat has to be something else. At that time, enter another character into the game, that was Sadi Carnot. Now, Sadi Carnot is the typical, how to say, product of a polytechnic, if you know what I mean. Okay, so he was really, he was very, very young. He somehow picked up idea of his father, Lazare Carnot, that has a lot of trouble at the end of his life, even including women. He was put in jail because he betrayed one, and so on and so forth. I mean, crazy story. But Lazare Carnot was an engineer that has the idea to look at the steam machine. And Sadi Carnot really bring up again the idea of his father. And he wrote in 1824 a very, very important book, Reflexion sur la puissance motrice du feu. So he made no commitment whatsoever what the heat is about. However, he established something very, very powerful. So first of all, he introduced the notion that to each thermodynamic system you can assign a point, when it's at equilibrium, of course. And then he introduced the idea that you can make reversible transformation. So move the things slowly so that at each point everything is defined and so on. And make in particular a cycle. So out of the cycle you get work. So the work is just the area of the cycle that you have done. So among the many different cycles that you can have in mind, he proposed one, which is obviously called Carnot cycle, where you take a gas, say you expand isothermic, adiabatic, and then press back and so on. And then, just analyzing all the known law of gases, he arrived to a very, very beautiful theorem, the Carnot theorem, which to me, I don't know to you, but to me, even after almost 200 years, it looks really extraordinary. He says something that the efficiency of any thermal engine doesn't depend on anything. It can be water, oil, whatever you want, but depend only on the temperature of the thermostat. So I think you should realize the surprise for the people at that time. I mean, it looks really, I mean, even to me now looks absolutely surprising. Yeah, sure. The maximum theoretical, obviously, yeah. Now, temperature, but which temperature? Now, there are several ways of measuring. Well, what we are talking about is the Kelvin temperature. And Kelvin is another curious character of the time, one of the father of thermodynamics, one that pushed the first principle and so on. Now, Lord Kelvin, as you know, has been a very, very successful man. He was an applied physicist, I would call. He was the first person that, I mean, he was responsible to put the telegraphic cable between the American and England. That was an incredibly difficult enterprise, but when he got it, he got enormously rich and enormously famous as well. So he spent a lot of his time thinking about thermodynamics. Actually, he was the man that invented the word thermodynamics. And the temperature defined by Carnot theorem is the temperature in honor of Kelvin. Now, as all we know, Carnot cycle is not a particular case because any transformation in thermodynamics you can reduce to Carnot cycle. So at the end was the main result of the time. So since physicists like to introduce to be quantitative each time that they enter a new concept, so people introduce what is called the second principle, alias that in any thermodynamic transformation there was a quantity much more abstract, much more difficult to imagine, that was called entropy by Rudolf Clausius. And we are talking about 1857. And he says that entropy in any transformation has to be, the variation has to be bigger than zero. So this obviously was the cut point for all the chimera of perpetual motion that people have think about the Middle Age, if not before. But on top of it, he says something deep, that time is an arrow, in a way. Okay, so people start to think about the evolution in time, and then, you know, there was a lot of speculation about ending of universe, heat, and so on and so forth. So what this is especially clear in irreversible system. So if you have a gas like this and then you just open and make diffuse it, well, at the end what you get is two vessels, which obviously you are never able to bring back. So there is something. So this was precisely the point where Boltzmann came about. So after all this piling of knowledge and also piling of paradox and so on, this is where Boltzmann come in the story. So Boltzmann graduated from the University of Vienna, which was founded by Doppler. So the man of Doppler effect was the first director of the institute. Boltzmann graduated in 1866, and his supervisor was Joseph Stefan, the person of black body radiation. And his close colleague and friend all life long was Joseph Loschmidt, that we will see will appear later in relation to career of Boltzmann. Now, the first paper of Boltzmann was about really the theory of heat. But later on in his life, he has spent a lot of time on electromagnetism. Actually, Boltzmann was very, very fond of electromagnetism because Stefan was fond. He always said, read the paper of Maxwell, he's the big guy of the. And indeed, people make a caricature of him, of Boltzmann, just playing with electric stuff. However, the main concern of Boltzmann was another one, was atomic view of nature. Now, you know, the atomic view of nature, I would say is like a karstic river, something that you see somehow on the surface at one point, then get deep, goes down, stay there, and suddenly appear in some other point. Now, you know that the atomic view has been pushed by Lucretius, for instance, in his book, De Rerum Natura. It's absolutely beautiful book. If you read it, you find really big surprise how deep Lucretius was about the force of nature. And Lucretius based everything on Heraclitus and Democritus, especially Democritus' ideas. Say one thing. All this is absolutely beautiful, marvelous, but really at the level of poetry. So it was very vague, was very fascinating, but really images, suggestion, how to say, nothing to do with the atomic theory we know nowadays, nothing to do. But nevertheless, was there. So after a century, probably, of disappearing, the atomic view start to coming up again with a Croatian priest, so Roger Joseph Boscovic, that was born in Dalmatia, actually. that he proposed nature as a set of body with attractive and repulsive interaction. He didn't get nowhere, he didn't get anywhere, it was vague, but was the idea was there. So one has to wait, really, Daniel Bernoulli, in the 1733, where in his masterpiece, Hydrodynamic, which he wrote in St. Petersburg, he came up with a very nice idea that the pressure of a gas is nothing else than a measurement of the velocity squared. So very, very simple calculation, but he got right. Well, almost right, because the velocity of what? Velocity, which velocity? So Maxwell understood that cannot be a unique velocity. If the gas has a unique velocity, out of the collision will get unstable, and they will distribute it. So the story has to be different. So Maxwell come back, again in our story, and he came back in a very interesting way. He was at the beginning analyzing the problem of the ring of Saturn, which he solved in 1855, getting also the Adam Prize for it. He understood that the ring was gas, cannot be solid ring that turned around because this was unstable and so on. But the problem of the gas dynamics bring him the idea to look at the problem. And then he, you know, with a very, very simple and elegant way, he got right the distribution. So based on symmetry. So it has to be based on the fact that it's a probabilistic variable. By symmetry, has to be the same in all directions. Therefore, the unique function which is satisfied is the exponential. So he got the Maxwell-Boltzmann distribution. Why Boltzmann, we'll see in a minute. So as we know, he brought it when you enlarge the temperature and so on. He explained, for instance, evaporation of coffee is used nowadays to make evaporation of Bose-Einstein condensation and so on and so forth. It's always the same principle. Now, by the way, it's very, very simple to check the Maxwell distribution if you have just a gas box here and then a selector of velocity with a cylinder. So just making rotate with the velocity you want to select. And actually, it's extraordinarily beautiful, satisfying. It's a law of extraordinary, you can see yourself. Now, we know, this obviously is a bit embarrassing to present here, but just to, so the fact that our gas looks like smooth things is simply due to the parameters of the gas which are there. So the velocity is extremely high. However, Clausius was the first to realize that there is another concept in the game, which is the free mean path. So it's true that the particles are very, very fast, but people ask him, so how is it that if I have a perfume here, I don't smell immediately there, if the velocity is so high? Well, I say, well, this is related to what? To the dimension of my atom. And therefore, when they move, spanning a certain cylinder along their way, they met a lot of particles in their way. And therefore, the free mean path can be very, very small, as well as the collision frequencies can be enormous. So we get the idea of this smooth nature of the things just for the parameters which are there. So for instance, if the radius was much, much higher, obviously we would experiment something else. Now, Maxwell was also responsible for another part of the story, which is the idea that the second law of thermodynamics can be only statistics. Because he invented what is called nowadays the Maxwell demon. So an ideal person that can open and close the door just to select the most energetic particle between two boxes so that you can have an unnatural transferring of it to the other side. So he realized that the deep validity of the second law of thermodynamics has to be only statistics. And so here is Boltzmann, indeed, he took up the idea that has to be related to collision and to statistics, actually, to the statistical law particle subject to mechanical law, but out of the mechanical law, the great number of these should produce new effect. And so here we are talking about the famous paper by Boltzmann in 1872, where he proposed what is called nowadays the H equation. So the H equation was the first equation written for a probability distribution, for the evolution of a probability distribution. And he got also that the Maxwell distribution was the only distribution that you can get at equilibrium. And then he introduced the H function, which in his opinion was related to entropy, and its decreasing was nothing else than the second law of thermodynamics. Now, immediately after that, he received some critics, and actually the contribution of Boltzmann in statistical mechanics is very articulate. I mean, it's not only one path. He made many, many papers. So he came back to the problem of entropy and H function in 1877, so 5 years later, where he introduced the concept of ensemble and divided the phase space in cell, making the partition, optimized the partition, and so on and so forth. So he introduced the concept of entropy as a measurement of disorder. So it was not done in 1872, but was done much later. And was done much later because the first paper received a lot of criticism, especially by two persons. His close friend, Joseph Loschmidt, was a friendly criticism. I mean, he just pointed out something. But a most harsh criticism by Zermelo. Now, Zermelo was a student of Planck. And Planck at that time was very, very serious, was very, very strong against statistical mechanics. He was the father of thermodynamics in all respect. You know, he wrote one of the masterpiece book in thermodynamics. Please. It's the same. Yeah, it's the Zermelo mathematician of action. Later on, he became the. It's the same person. Yeah. So what was the objection? Well, the objection of Loschmidt was very simple. Say, look, the law of mechanics is invariant under time. How you can have a quantum track on your mathematical, mechanical values which has an asymmetry in time? So it was just the paradox or reversal in time. The objection of Zermelo was much subtle in a way, much more. And he referred to the Poincaré theorem of recurrence. That say that if you have a mechanical system, sooner or later you will come back to the same point where you start off. So how you can have a quantity that decrease when you know that finally you will arrive to the same point? I will not enter here in any discussion on this point. We'll end here the story, okay. Well, I mean, the paper was 1872, and I rise almost immediately.
The paper you're referring to was before
that? Yeah. I think so. Yeah. So it was almost immediately. Actually, to make the story. Yeah. Now, look, I can tell you much more probably privately, otherwise we'll diverge in the discussion. But let me just say one thing. The critic was serious, of course. He can be handled. However, Boltzmann was not probably the best lawyer of himself. So, for instance, he wrote a reply to, to Nature, which I think exists at the time, trying to answer Zermelo. But instead of sharply addressed the question, he made out of one page of paper the first page with something absurdly on metaphysics, you don't know what he's talking about. So he looks absolutely angry about something, and so he cannot make sense of it. As a matter of fact, in England, at a certain point, there was even a conference where it was said, "Does everybody knows what H theorem is about?" So people were really, a bit puzzled about that. However, there was a main difference. In the English environment, was taken as curiosity and try to understand what's going on. So people see the difficulties but try to go on. But in Austrian and German environment was really strong cut off. And one of the most influential person responsible for this was Ernst Mach. Now Ernst Mach was indeed a very, very influential philosopher of science at that time. For instance, he wrote this book, The Mechanics in His Historical and Critical Development, which is really a beautiful book for the level of Hume, where he, and indeed Einstein was really a follower of Mach at the beginning. But then Mach really pushed too far the things. Also, it's true that Mach and Boltzmann were not in very personal good terms. So they shared the same university. At a certain point, they were both in Vienna, but they have several arguments together. And one of the most harsh, the harshest of them, was that in an academic lecture, Ernst Mach just stand up and say, "Professor Boltzmann, I don't believe in your atoms. Full stop." Simply because Mach was the philosopher of phenomenology, of empirism. So once you say, "I'm able to connect this pressure with the volume, why the hell I should care what is behind? This is already there. You don't need to make any extra hypothesis." Now, another school of thought that was antagonism to Boltzmann was the school of energetic, which come from chemistry. And Wilhelm Ostwald, that was a chemistry, he got a Nobel Prize in chemistry in 1909. He was also a close friend of Boltzmann, personal speaking. However, there were really antagonism, scientifically speaking, because in his opinion, and a bunch of other people, energy was the basic concept, not atom, energy. Now, there was a public debate in Lübeck in 1895, where they really called for a meeting to discuss the point, atomism versus energetic. And as a matter of fact, Ostwald, as you could even see, from this figure, he was really a brilliant speaker, brilliant guy, and so on. Boltzmann was a bit chubby, how to say, was really, was very clumsy in his way. So, I'm talking 1895, so he was 50. So, at the beginning, everybody would bet that the victory will go to Ostwald. He was much brilliant in exposing his idea and so on. However, in the world of witnesses, Felix Klein, for instance, Sommerfeld, that was there, all the mathematicians at that time, the real winner of that conference was Boltzmann, that is a charging bull, really push the point, make clear that it was much more deeper, with much more consequences, and so on and so forth. So people afterwards say, really, Boltzmann was the winner of the time. Now, it should be said that probably if it was just for Boltzmann, probably we were not talking today of statistical mechanics as we know. Because probably an influential person in the development was Gibbs. So Gibbs live and work isolated here in Yale, and probably never move probably within 20 meters out of his house, something like this. And he published this treatise on statistical mechanics. By the way, notice who was the editor. That was very, very well received, either in England, Maxwell was enthusiastic about it, but also in German-speaking country. And the reason was that Gibbs, and if you read, you can see immediately, make no commitments about atoms. Say, look, I don't, probably it's true, probably it's not, I don't know. I will just set the rules. I will tell you what the rules are and how they work. So After that, Planck was really start to turning his attention, takes up all the things, and statistical mechanics really developed. Now, Boltzmann was getting depressed, though, very depressed. As I said, the beginning of the century, tried the first attempt to commit suicide. And so this was the pendulum down, but then the pendulum goes up again, and he decided to come to United States. So in 1904, he made to a conference to St. Louis, then to Berkeley, then to Stanford, and he wrote a marvelous book. I really suggest you to read because it's fantastic. The book is Travel of a German Professor in El Dorado. And is all the adventure he has here with a very wit, I mean, with very witty spirit. For instance, he make a lot of joke about Berkeley. Berkeley was the idealistic philosopher which he was against. He was a realism man. I mean, he believed in reality. So he make a lot of fuss about Berkeley, how the most idealistic philosopher, but then when you go to university, everything is concrete. You say, I mean, you have to read. I am not able to do the joke. Another joke, which is fantastic, was how he explained he want to have some wine. You know, in Vienna at that time, people enjoy wine. So he's staying in Berkeley, say, well, where can I have some wine? And the reaction received was something embarrassing. Oh, no, don't talk about this. Look, I will tell you where to go. So he described, he described the kind of reaction he got for this simple question in the most extraordinary and comics way. So you can see immediately, I mean, the pendulum was really half at that point. It's really an enjoyable book. Unbelievable that was written by him, how to say, the way people think about him. But at that year, he was somehow no longer interested what's going on in the active research. So indeed, he was not aware of many things was going on at that time. So he was, he was mostly concerned in writing books. So he write books for his own popular science, and he wrote the lecture of gas theory, which is where he says more like a word for the future, I mean. Because he say, I'm convinced that all these attacks are merely based on misunderstanding. And in my opinion, it would be a great tragedy for science if the theory of gas were thrown into oblivion because of momentary hostile attitude toward it, as for was, for example, the wave theory of light because of Newton's authority. And if you read the book, you can see he's talking to other generation. He was not talking to his own generation. So at that time, there is also a very significant writing of him, a lyric. So he wrote a lyric devoted to Beethoven. Beethoven was one of his heroes. He likes to play piano, by the way. His master, his teacher of piano was Bruckner, Anthony Bruckner. So, I mean, he was a very gifted person and very interested in music. So Beethoven was one of his heroes, I was saying. So he wrote a lyric where he imagined Beethoven in heaven, visiting him without any more pain. Everything has been released and so on. Now, if you read this, this lyric, is really the moment where he's saying he's going to commit suicide. In my opinion, it's written there. I mean, he has a desire to give up and to have really peace and so on. It's a quite touchy lyrics. So even though his family was close to him, his demons were back, and were back very, very heavily. So finally, as we said at the beginning, he commits suicide in Duino, where the wife, Duino, at that time was part of Austro-Hungarian Empire. It was the sea side of the Austrian Empire. So the wife has some relatives nearby in Gorizia. So he proposed him to take some rest and go there. So they went there, but okay, this was the story. Obviously, his death has much echo on the press. So for instance, all the German press has many articles. I just wrote some of this. Now, it's very ironic that really the confirmation of all his idea just come was on the corner. So I come from Brownian motion, and come from the most famous pattern Clark in history, from Einstein. So that he had the idea to check the reality of atom, to design an experiment that can... So he wrote for, in 1905, a series of papers, as we know, Brownian motion. But he had the idea that the particle in a liquid that move around, once you select everything, contain parameters, which is nothing else than the number of molecules of the gas. So if you are able to measure the quadratic dispersion, this is the constant of gas, temperature, time, blah, 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 so you might get the number of Avogadro. By the way, Joseph Loschmidt was the first person that had the first determination of Avogadro number in a different way, in a clever way, but in a different way. So I took Jean Perrin in 1809 to conduct the experiment, and just to have the diffusion of particle measured, and from the random motion, it just gets the estimation of Avogadro number. So really, it's an irony of the history that it just was there, his struggle of his life, blah, blah, blah. But the solution of the problem and his recognition was there. Actually, Ostwald changed his mind later on. He acknowledged, fully acknowledges. Mach never. Planck acknowledged as well, and Planck was very, very fond of the Boltzmann work, as you know. An inspiration of division in phase space and so on came from the device of Boltzmann to do this calculation. That for Boltzmann was a device, was a trick. Planck also was to think it was a trick, but he realized it was not a trick and so on. Okay, so Boltzmann legacy, well, I have prepared something, let's say a few minutes, but I'm not able to do everything. But I just want to say that, okay, this was the story of Boltzmann in short. That the nice thing is that, obviously, all the ideas Boltzmann persist nowadays and is booming in many directions. And statistical mechanics nowadays is enriched by many, many fields. And there are really a new and beautiful idea on the way. So let me just sketch some of them, just for fun, if you want. Now, in biology, for instance, the problem of protein folding can be addressed by statistical methods, as well as people have pushed understanding of the brain in terms of complicated network and interaction between several agents. So then there is all the development of phase transition, problem like Potts model, relation also with topological problem, which is quite deep. So the fact that the zeros or the partition function is related to the number of coloring that you can have, and so on and so forth. And as all we know, beautiful development in conformal invariants nowadays, how I cannot mention here SLE, obviously, random surfaces, random matrices, which after all is Boltzmann weight for object, and you sum of it, and then we make beautiful things out of it, string, whatever else, and so on and so forth. The nice thing is that this idea is really general. This is what I like. For instance, take a Riemann function. We'll just spend a few minutes on Riemann function. That, as all we know, is a function with pole there, zeros in the plane, some trivial, some non-trivial of it. Now, let me explain how statistical ideas can enter in this subject. Well, it can enter in many ways. The first is very simple, that all Dirichlet functions somehow admit obvious statistical interpretation. So it's kind of partition function with spatial energy level. So the pole S equal 1, a physicist would tend to interpret as critical Hagedorn temperature. So the density of states grows so much at a certain point the system collapses. Now, the real imaginary part of the Riemann function is what makes the story funny, because when you plot in the complex plane, this one varying beta, you see that as far as you are away from the critical line, so let me You see, the Riemann function never goes to the origin. But when you stick to alpha equal 1 half, it turns to the origin infinite number of times. So people have made statistics of the distribution, you know all this story, and they found a beautiful agreement with random matrices. So the same concept which was born in other subjects which pop up here. Now let me also draw the attention on a very known way I would call a theoretical physicist proof of Riemann conjecture. So let's say, how probable is the Riemann conjecture? If you take the Möbius function, which is the inverse, instead to have zeros, we'll have pole on the imaginary axis. So this one is a Dirichlet function with coefficients which are even 1 or minus 1, depending on the multiplicative nature of the number. So the Möbius function can be written in terms of a Mellin transform of this function, which is the sum of them. Now you see, the 1, the mu, is a function which is related to a multiplicative number, whereas moving n, n plus 1, you are sensitive to the additive 1. So it's oscillating wildly between 1 and minus 1. Obviously there are correlations between them. This is the objection of mathematicians. But the first naive picture, it looks like a Brownian motion. So a Brownian motion, we know what is the way our Brownian motion grows. And indeed, I made just a few attempts drawing this sum. So you see, you see that it goes, you can convince yourself that, the oscillation grows really square root. And square root is the singularity of the Mellin, and therefore is where the singularity are located. Now, I cannot resist here, being in a SLA conference, to draw the attention to another point, which might be silly, eh? You have to tell me. So, you know, if you draw the number on lattice like this, and then you start just erasing the prime, you get this kind of distribution. So this is done with 1,000 numbers, but you can get higher of them. So the problem is, can you get, some property of this cluster number? I think it would be nice. And also, depending also on the triangular lattice, hexagonal one, and so on. By the way, all the boulevard that you see in this number town, if you want, are all the polynomial expression where you get prime out of polynomial, something like n squared minus 41 n plus 41. So it's one of these great things. Well, okay, I will not have time to enter in much more development. Turbulence, where H equation play an important role. Spin glasses and disorder system, as we know, has been a growing subject. Optimization as use idea of statistical mechanics, Latiger liquid and all low-dimensional physics, Bose-Einstein condensation, and so on. However, if I have to bet what Boltzmann would have liked most, my personal bet would be this. So you take black hole entropy, so you have Boltzmann constant, first of all, and then Planck scale where all the constants of nature enter, G, C, H, blah, blah, blah. So my personal opinion is that Boltzmann would be the formula that would have like lost. So I somehow would like to think that Boltzmann, looking at the development that has been recently, would turn his serious expression into a much more laughing one. Okay, thank you very much for that. No. As far as I can see, I mean, as far as I study documents and so on and so forth, I arrived to the conclusion that was both. So on the personal side, he was kind of seriously ill. So he had asthma, very serious asthma, angina pectori, was almost blind. You know, each time that he got an appointment at some university, in the contract is written, I will have this guy that will read for me. So he was overloaded with academic duty. By the way, at the end, he took the course of Mark, his lively friend, how to say, and he has to teach history of and philosophy of science. And he was not a philosopher, but he took the story very, very seriously, so he overloaded himself reading and so on. I will show you, if you are interested, some of his writing. Is amazing. If you are a psychology, you would say, my God, this guy is crazy. I mean, he's something frantic. So he was he was a perfectionist in a way. So at a certain point, he felt that out of this physical disease, he cannot make it anymore. He cannot make it. So this was a part of the story. His son has died a few years before, and this brings him a lot of sorrow in his life. And then on top of it, he was just depressed. I mean, definitely the physical recognition of his colleague play a role. In German-speaking country, he has really hard time. And he played a role, but you know, when you arrive such tragic things, probably is a sum of many, many, rather than one. As I said at the beginning, he was acknowledged. He was even nominated for the Nobel Prize at that time, so I was not the unknown guy. Yeah, I know what you mean. Well, I have to say that as far as I can see, I mean, I look many, many sources. I didn't look all, but I look many. I never come to any point where there was really a relation between Einstein and Boltzmann. Somehow Boltzmann didn't even know that Einstein exists, in a way. So was really unaware of the work of Einstein, as we know nowadays, as it was at that time. So I don't think there was really any serious moment where Boltzmann think about Einstein ideas. I mean, this is to the best of my... Yeah. So I don't think... Yeah, that commits suicide as well, as you know. Yeah, he had. Yeah, Nernst. Yeah. And I think another one, which now I don't remember, but was not really a school of Boltzmann. The most famous was Ehrenfest, indeed. Were expressed. Both. Well, the public version of it was really Ernest Mach was the voice. I would say not Frank Sinatra, but Ernest Mach, the voice was the. He said publicly, loudly, that it was completely crap physics. It doesn't make any sense at all. No, yeah, but I mean, Boltzmann linked the two very, very closely, the two teams very, very closely. So Mach opposed him in all possible ways, aggressively, very, very aggressively. So he said, as I said, in a public lecture, Professor Boltzmann, I don't believe in your atom. This is anything stupid. Now, there was another way of, how to say, the usual way of... making criticism in science. This was the England style, the English. So they wrote several papers. There was, as I said, even an issue and a conference that was entitled, "Does anybody knows what H theorem is about?" Because the point was that the first version of Boltzmann, he produced this paper, and then he called theorem. Say, "I prove that this function decreases on time." Then people say, "But look, I mean, this cannot be, it's a mechanism." Say, "Okay, but this happens sometimes." Say, "But excuse me, is a theorem or is not a theorem?" "Yeah, yeah, it's a theorem, but it happens sometimes, you know that." So this was not really the best way of making publicity to this idea, so he was the worst lawyer of himself. No, no, I think the first version he get wrong himself. I mean, he was excited to find this quantity decrease in time, was the entropy. No, but then the statistic interpretation of it was later on. Yeah. By the way, Maxwell was so clever not to put his finger in it, you know. When he saw all the difficulties, and he also wrote to Tate, his friend, say something, "Well, I don't know what this Boltzmann is about. I mean, do you understand what's going on?" I mean, making, you know, Maxwell has an ironic style in many, many of his writing. So I was concerned there was a big problem there to derive fully statistical mechanics, irreversibility of time out of mechanics. He understood, so he stepped out of it.
About the understanding of the atomic hypothesis in the 19th century, I'm a little bit confused by something. You would think from the point of view of the chemist, since so much of chemistry can be understood in terms of atoms combining into molecules,
why
did they immediately embrace the atomic hypothesis?
This is an absolutely good point. I have some slide on it. I didn't present it. I found really ironic, that in this physics community, say physical philosophy, there was such harsh and such debate about that, whereas chemistry, going another stream of things, they accept without any doubt. I mean, Mendeleev's table was already established. The proportional law of composition was there. So people didn't doubt about it. You know, you see what I mean? Was much more... Sorry?
They accepted the atomic
hypothesis. Well, I mean, or at least was a rule how to handle things. The rule works. So probably the step is really to make a reality of it, to make precise statement on the property of these things. But for them, for the chemistry community, was something natural to live with. Indeed, this was very... I found myself very, very funny that really parallel, almost simultaneous. Mendeleev's table, I think, is 1865, something like this. So, I mean, it's precisely that time. Whereas, on the other side, crazy and wild polemics about this. Yeah, it's a good point, yeah.
Do you know whether Boltzmann was impressed by the discovery of the electron?
No, I don't think so. No, indeed, at the end of his life, he dropped research in the usual sense of the work almost completely. He was, how to say, devoted to his books. He doesn't read anymore also because he has problems. He had difficulties of following. I don't think he realized and appreciated at all. I don't think so, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.